We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
103 and change. Pete Najarian will join us shortly. We'll talk a little bit of football, but not much. We'll talk about the economy, of course. Pete heavily involved in the stock market. What did yesterday do to it? Both obstruction of justice charges, perhaps against President Trump. And a shooting directed at our Congress folks. I don't know if it matters if it's Republican or Democrats to the economy. We'll visit with Pete Najarian about both. Adam Carter has the news. Welcome back. Mike Maxine for Chad Hartman. Jordana Green coming up at 3 o'clock. All kinds of fun things straight ahead here in The Good Neighbor. One doctor is using Disney movies to detect brain damage. Find out how with Jordana coming up. 3 o'clock. Pete Najarian, it's always a good day when I get to visit with him. Pete, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Maxie. It's great to join you, man.
You too. I got a question for you off the beaten path before we talk about the market and the economics. The other night I was watching one of those 30 for 30s on Miami against Notre Dame, the criminals against the convicts against the Catholics. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this, and obviously Lou Holtz is a big part of it, and you played for Lou Holtz. But then this Bush, this character at Notre Dame that printed all these T-shirts, and then at the end of it, they go on to show that he was on the floor as a traitor in Chicago. And I thought, I wonder if he and Pete ever crossed paths.
You know what? I've crossed paths with plenty of different people. I don't know that I ever actually did cross paths there, but actually a guy who worked for me on the trading floor was one of the offensive linemen, a guy named Jeff Kilberg for Lou back in that era.
Okay.
And we have a little bit of a business deal going on as we speak. Jeff's a great guy, And I'll tell you, we exchanged those Notre Dame stories and the Lou Holtz stories like you wouldn't believe. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun to watch that. It was fun to watch the whole thing. You kind of see this rivalry that festered between Holtz and Jimmy Johnson that they don't directly acknowledge. But sometimes we forget about that, Pete. We always think about the players and the fans, the rivalry. There's a lot of coaches that don't really care for each other.
Oh, there's some egos on the coaching side of things. And I think that does pop in. I tell you, I loved my man Lou, and he went up against a lot of different characters over the years where it turned into rivalry sort of a situation just because, you know, Lou, like all of us, he hates to lose, and he's going to do everything he can to win, you know, within the reason and within the rules. And he's just a great guy. I tell you what, I miss talking to him and haven't had a chance to connect with Lou in quite some time.
Yeah, he's quite a guy. I mean, just interesting to follow him. Yesterday, of course, havoc in the U.S. on two fronts. Let's start with the shooting. How does that apply to the market when there's uncertainty, it's not terroristic, domestically terroristic, I guess, but when something like that happens, an event like that, what does that do to the economy?
Well, you know, it does take center stage, of course, but, you know, because of the world we live in today, Maxie, and the news is constant, and it's 24 hours. It's not waiting till the 10 o'clock news. It's 24 hours a day. And, you know, we seem to take in news, and we literally are able to move on very, very rapidly to the next subject.
Yes.
And I don't mean to play down what happened yesterday. That was an absolutely awful thing. I think all would agree on that, you know, Republicans, Democrats, everybody. But in terms of the market, it got a lot of focus. A lot of people were talking about it. But in the end of it all, I think the movement of the market sort of spoke for itself. It was negative at times, and we actually finished the day on the positive side of things. So whether that's right or wrong, the market's focused right back onto the stock market itself.
And I hate to simplify this, but as you sat it as an observer, you said, okay, it looks like everybody's going to live, and they got the shooter. And they're saying that there's only one involved. Therefore, I kind of take a deep breath. It's not as if I'm thinking there's another one out there. There's not and that strikes you rather quickly. And I don't want to say you move on because you're certainly taken aback by it and you think about it and all those things. But once you kind of feel that the situation has been defined, you do kind of move on to the next story, don't you?
Well, you're exactly right. Once it's been defined and once we get more of the answers and get much more clarity to the whole story, early on in the morning, of course, there was much more pressure on the market because there wasn't enough knowledge. But as we gained some knowledge of the situation and more of the details, I think it did, you know, it calmed down at least maybe some of the worst aspects of potentially what could have been there. And I think that's why the markets focused back on the markets and a little bit less. Obviously, this continued to be in front of us, you know, whether you're in the stock market or not. I mean, this took center stage when you looked across any media outlet. That was the focus of the day, and it probably should have been. But quite frankly, you know, at some point, you have to look at the markets and say, okay, what's the reaction going to be? And once we got a little bit more detail there, I think the markets were able to feel more comfortable about, you know, buying and selling of the stocks.
And then we hear that term obstruction of justice stemming from the Washington Post as it pertains to the president of the United States, which makes it a little bit different. How is it the same thing? Is there so much stuff out there, particularly on Donald Trump, that we tend, it becomes, I don't want to say white noise, but to an extent, from the market's perspective, it is until somebody proves different?
Yeah, you know, there's been so much, Maxie. It would be one thing if, you know, we had gone through the beginnings of this Donald Trump presidency and this suddenly came up. I think that would have a monstrous, more than a couple hour impact on the markets. I mean, if you take a look at the stock market today, for instance, we were down pretty significantly at the beginning of the trading session. And now all of a sudden we've kind of been chopping our way back up to closer towards positive, at least well off of some of the lows. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, there's a lot of different things going on in the market right now as well. And last Friday was a great example of that. We call it algorithmic trading. And what that really means is computers taking over and they are trying to rush in front of orders. And it's something that we call the FANG stocks, you know, and Facebook and Amazon and Netflix and Google, and which is actually Alphabet. But when those FANG stocks, when those are such strong parts of what's been going on and pushing the S&P 500 higher, and suddenly there's some algorithms that are saying, hey, look, we're going to get in front of some of the selling here, that accelerates and that actually exaggerates some of the moves that we've seen. And that's what we saw a little bit again today in the morning. And that's even kind of gotten some relief. So it's a different world that we live in now. And as we progress with computers and the news cycle, you just have to really be on top of it at all times.
When you see Trump pull out of climate change, or at least funding of internationally, at least that's the statement that was made. It's much different than just a single statement. What happens domestically to entrepreneurs that are looking at, we still want clean energy, we still want to do this? Do they pop up all over? Do they become a more valuable commodity? Do they become what?
Well, it's an interesting situation because I don't know how long term people feel. You know, I have my own opinions, and I obviously each and every one of us do in terms of how we're trading various stocks in the marketplace itself right now. But I think that if you're looking a lot longer term, if you're looking like Warren Buffett does towards the future, one way or the other, Maxie, we're going to be addressing more about climate change, whether or not we pull out of Paris and all the rest of this and all the news recently. The reality is we all are going to be more and more focused on all kinds of things that are going to be much more progressive in the future. So will there be some delays? Sure. But that might even create some opportunities. You know, every time you see in the marketplace, you know, when we see violent moves to the downside, or if there's a sector, whether it's the biotech sector, because Hillary Clinton says we're going to go after these guys for price gouging and that type of thing. It really just, it just is, all you got to do is change the sector, change the situation around. And I think there are opportunities that get created in those kind of situations because you get exaggerated moves both up and down.
Is it healthy from the standpoint that something like that will encourage people in the United States to get aggressive about it? Because if you can dangle money out there as the carrot, we end up with a better product, but we need to motivate people by believing that they can make a ton of money?
Yeah, well, you just said it. I mean, if there is one great motivator in life, and we all know about that,
yep.
That's the dollar. And if there is an opportunity for folks, there's always somebody out there that's smart enough to be looking forward. And if there are the dollars there, they're going to be aggressive and they're going to press in that direction. I mean, we've been watching this huge turn from Silicon Valley for multiple years now, obviously. And it really was back in the days of Apple. And then suddenly you get, you know, Google and Facebook and all of these. And all of a sudden you build up Cisco and Oracle and the world becomes part of that Silicon Valley world. Well, those guys and others around the country are always looking for the next thing. And as everybody searches for that, as long as the dollars are there, they're going to search really, really hard for that. And obviously, we'll be talking about those in the next 5 or 10 years.
Last question. We always talk about the importance of leadership, and I'm incredibly bullish on great leadership creates great cultures, and you win with great cultures, whether it's a, you know, sports or a radio station or TV station, whatever it is. How many times do you see a great CEO go on and become a great CEO at another company? How many times do they do it twice, or is there a certain magic that happens because they recognize a culture and they things just fall into place like they do a team? Is it really difficult for a CEO to be really effective twice in their life?
I think that the answer to that is probably yes. And those that have the most success really seem to have an incredible passion for where they are. I mean, there are exceptions to that rule, and there are those out there that have been great in multiple different situations as CEOs. But I'll tell you, when I break down stocks, Maxie, when I'm looking, especially if I'm looking for something more long-term, the first thing I look at is the management. That is number one. I want to see who's in charge and if they're the right person. I mean, if you look at Amazon, for me, it's a far less about what's really going on presently in e-commerce and in the cloud. And, you know, everybody talks about the AWS, the Amazon Web Services, and all of these different ventures that that Google jumps into. But it really starts at the top, and it's the directive from the top. And those guys, there are some unbelievable CEOs out there, and we've got plenty of them in the Twin Cities and the Minnesota area. I got to tell you, when I look at these companies, I look at various names and I say, you know what, that's a great leader and that's a guy that I'm willing to bet with. And I'll give you one last example, and I know we got to go, but General Electric, 16 years, the worst performing Dow stock. The problem really started at the top. Very good friend of mine, Jeff Emerald, and a great person, lived in my town back in New Canaan, Connecticut. But I'll tell you what, he was always behind. They were 2 steps behind and never could get forward, never were able to look ahead. Buying oil companies at the very top, getting out of the financials during the financial crisis. I mean, they were always, unfortunately, just steps, you know, behind and never were able to catch up. And the real sign of a great CEO is somebody who's a visionary who can see forward 3 to 5 years. Not just looking backwards and saying, you know what, this is the way we're going to have to move. We just saw this happen. You've got to always be looking forward. And those innovators that are out there, it's the reason why many of these stocks, whether it's Zuckerberg at Facebook or it was Steve Jobs at Apple, now Tim Cook, they're looking forward. And if they're looking forward, you're going to probably have a lot of success.
Pete, great to visit with you always. Hope we can do it in person soon, maybe over lunch.
I look forward to it. Take care, Maxie. Have a great afternoon.
You bet. Pete Najarian. How much fun is that? When we come back, it's the story of the best of times and the worst of times over the last couple of months for one young man that I know. And it's a story that I have a tough time keeping a dry eye when I tell it, but I will when we come back. Welcome back. Mike Maxine for Chad Hartman, News Radio 830 WCCO. Jordana Green up next and Eric Nelson. Renee Montgomery will join him. We'll be doing Sports to the Max tonight on WCCO. Earlier this year, 2 months ago, I did maybe the most difficult story that I've ever done because it was personal to me. One of my good friends that I grew up with, it's a tough story to even repeat, but last summer at this time, she was preparing for her first son's wedding. She had a great job at the Minnesota State School Board Association and was the ultimate mom in Gaylord, Sibley East, that whole area. And 3 days after her oldest son got married, she was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, Tiffany Rodning. And we all watched over the next several months as she fought this battle that she had no chance to win. And it was incredibly difficult because she is just, everybody that knows her knows. She just is somebody that she never thought would die because she just was too busy living all the time. And she fought incredibly hard. And she passed away in late March. And the same day, her oldest son, now married, expecting their first child. So she knew she was going to be a grandmother. Her youngest son, they have 2 children, pitcher at Minnesota State Mankato. And the same day that she passed away, he went out and pitched that night at U.S. Bank Stadium. And they played against Minnesota Duluth. And Brody Rodning insisted on taking the game ball, even though he had said goodbye at his mother's bedside. In the wee hours that morning, was by her side when she passed. And they played Minnesota Duluth that night. And he cranked it up for mom. And the score was 0-0 after six innings, going into the seventh inning, which was the last inning in college baseball in doubleheader. He said, just get me one, boys. And they got him one run. And he went out and finished it up. A two-hitter, a 1-0 shutout with the community there. And he and his father, Brian, and everybody was crying. And then a few days later, we laid his mother to rest. And he and his brother were able to put their college jerseys on her casket and say goodbye. And it was just an incredibly difficult time, and still is. All of us are still processing it. Well, yesterday, I was driving along, and as I mentioned, I was in Colorado. I'm driving along, and I get a text from his dad. And it just says, 13th round, Toronto Blue Jays. His son, who pitched this incredible, courageous game, got drafted yesterday in the 13th round by the Toronto Blue Jays. And mom maybe didn't get to see it, but everybody knows that mom saw it. And Brody will go on now to pitch, play professional baseball, live his dream out. Just 2 months removed from losing his biggest fan, his mother. And to see all of this happen in the space of the last couple of months has been incredible. I'm driving in the front seat, and I look at this text, and I got sunglasses on, and I'm sure a lot of people have the same reaction. Your tears are just coming down. Because you know everything this family's been through in this community, and now to see it not end but another new beginning, that he will get the opportunity that he and his mother, his mom helped him fill out all the paperwork when all the major league teams were coming for him to fill out different forms during the fall to see, you know, about his personality and all that stuff. And she was right there with him every step of the way, and she won't get to see him pitch maybe professionally, but she'll get to. And it was the end of the culmination of quite a spring for that family and for Brody Rodnick. So congratulations, Brody. You know mom was watching from up above. Stay with us. Welcome back. Mike Maxine for Chad Hartman on News Radio 830 WCCO. Larry Jacobs, Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs, University of Minnesota, well known on this show and beyond, joins us now to talk about some of the political climate and perhaps some of the waves that go with the possible obstruction of justice charge against the President of the United States. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Let's start with obstruction of justice. Can you define it for us so that we understand in layman's terms exactly what it means or what the line is that you can't cross if you'd be held in contempt or in obstruction?
Yeah, so if you've got a prosecutor who's looking to go after someone for a crime, if you get in the way of that, impede it or obstruct it, you are potentially engaging in obstruction of justice. The idea is derailing a prosecutor. If you do it, big trouble.
So first there has to be, before you, it would be considered obstruction, you have to know that there's a prosecutor on the case?
You have to know there's a prosecutor. You have to have the intent of actually going out there and impeding the prosecution of a crime. There has to be a crime that was committed. It's not an easy charge to establish.
Yeah, let's just say hypothetically, for lack of a better, so Trump has a conversation with fill in the blank, and he asks them to do something. And then before they ever this becomes a case, he calls him back up and he says, you know, I hope you didn't misinterpret that. I didn't mean for you to whatever. Does that clear him at all? I mean, can he say anything he wants until it's an official case?
Presidents are not like you and me. They have quite a bit of power. And just to start things off here, presidents are in charge of the Department of Justice. They're the ones who are ahead of what our lawyers are going to be looking into. So there's quite a bit of discretion for a president to steer the Department of Justice. You'd really have to have some open and shut evidence that the president intended to obstruct justice. And so far, we don't have that.
The Mueller-Comey relationship, is there somebody that oversees that part and investigates it as to, you know, as they go forward as to the motivation?
Well, what you're referring to is that James Comey, who was just recently until fired by Trump, the head of the FBI, had previously worked with his predecessor, had been director of the FBI, Robert Mueller, who's now the special prosecutor. And the question is, are they somehow in cahoots? You know, there is a deputy attorney general at the Department of Justice, and he's kind of formally in charge of supervising that relationship.
So there is someone that watches the watchdogs.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, legally, president has constitutional power to fire the special prosecutor. Politically, it'd be a boneheaded move by Trump if he tried to do it, because it would probably bring on a whole lot of Republicans into thinking Trump is up to wrongdoing.
Well, if he hadn't fired Comey, where would we be sitting today, do you think?
You know, to be honest with you, I think it would have petered out, because once he fires Comey, you get a special prosecutor, and Robert Mueller is a very, very smart guy, and, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know what party he's in. He's just the guy who's had a career of catching people and, you know, breaking the law. And here's the part that would worry me most if I was Donald Trump. Mueller is looking into the financial relationships between members of the Trump campaign and perhaps the Trump family and Russia in terms of financing, the money flow. And so Mueller's brought on all these financial experts. That would worry me more than obstruction of justice, because that's going to be, I think, hard to prove and probably unlikely for a Republican Congress to impeach a Republican president for.
So what you're saying is, while they might not find obstruction, they may stumble across a low-interest loan from Russia or a reason to believe that Russia was pushing for him to be president in this process, even though that's not the intent of investigating, even though that's not obstruction of justice, they could stumble across that as they begin to peruse through the details.
Yes, and that's exactly right. The latitude for the special prosecutor is very, very broad. He was hired not to just look in to obstruction of justice. The language basically says, was there anything going on here in terms of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia? And now we're getting into all these other tangents, including obstruction of justice and possible, this is all guesswork, financial maneuverings, you know, deals being cut with Russia by people in the Trump campaign or Trump family in exchange for helping Trump win the election.
Okay, so let's just say that during the campaign, some people from the Trump campaign did have business dealings with Russia that were advantageous to them, and maybe they even asked Russia to put some money behind their dad's campaign. What can they do with Russia versus what can't they do?
Well, if they're engaged in financial dealings with Russia and it's connected to Russia tampering with our elections, that's going to be pretty serious. And
but it has to be linked to tampering with elections.
It certainly.
In other words, you can do any business deal you want, right?
Sure, of course. You know, there are disclosure requirements.
Right, as long as you fulfill that part of it.
Yeah, but we're talking like offshore banks. We're talking about kind of shell banks. I mean, the people that Mueller has hired are some of the best in the country. So when Donald Trump is talking about firing him, to be honest with you, I get it. Because if there's anything amiss, there's a good chance Mueller and this team he's put together are going to find it.
If you're Donald Trump right now, then, is it most effective to tweet more fake news, more this, more that, to dilute the situation?
No. The best thing Donald Trump could do would be to shut up, to be honest with you, and do the work. What he wants people in the country to be thinking about is what he's doing to grow jobs, what he's doing to rebuild the infrastructure, his reforms of taxes and health care. And every time he tweets, he's usually distracting people from this. And now we know that the special prosecutor considers his tweets to be helpful in terms of establishing motive. So he's really hurting himself. I've never seen a more self-destructive president, and I've been studying this for 30 years.
When they talk about hacking into Hillary Clinton's emails, and let's just say it came from Russia, but there was no Trump didn't pay for it or anything like that. He just happens to do business over there, et cetera, et cetera. Is he culpable for anything if independently they acted, even though they were trying to find favor with him?
You know, that's really hard to say. I mean, we're speculating here, and I think one of the painful parts of this process is there are a lot of great questions, including that one. We're not going to know the answer for months, and to me, that's emerging as the biggest problem, which is as uncomfortable as Republicans and President Trump are with the special prosecutor and the slow investigation, it's not going anywhere soon. I mean, I could see this being around for another year or perhaps more. It's going to be a slow drip, drip, drip with, you know, little bits of stories coming out along the way. Extremely frustrating, very damaging to President Trump and Republicans.
If they come out, if the investigation exonerates him, does he get more of an even bigger bounce than others would because he says, I told you so all along?
Yeah, I think possibly. The question is he doing himself so much damage along the way by things he's saying and doing, like firing Comey, that that he's going to lose that? For instance, if he had not fired Comey, Comey had done his investigation, there was no special prosecutor, and Comey came back and said what Comey revealed in testimony last week. He said there is no evidence that Donald Trump was involved in colluding with Russia. If Trump had just let the investigation come to that conclusion, this thing would be over very soon. That's where Comey was going. And then, you know, President Trump decides to fire him. It was really unnecessary and quite harmful to him. Now he's got, you know, Robert Mueller as a special prosecutor. I'll tell you.
Be careful what you wish for, kind of thing?
Exactly. I mean, if Mueller was the guy investigating me, I wouldn't be sleeping at night. Not that I've done anything wrong, but, you know, there's always like a T that didn't cross.
Is there a precedent on this? We'll talk about Watergate, but in the history of our storied land, is there anything else that comes to mind that is akin to this?
Well, you know, obviously the impeachments. And remember, impeachment is a two-step process. Begins with the House, and then there is a trial in the Senate. But the action by the House, we've seen that with Nixon, well, beginning with Nixon, didn't actually move forward because he resigned. But we also saw Bill Clinton impeached. And, you know, those were late in presidential terms. We've never seen anything, you know, at the beginning of an administration like this, nor something where the president seems so incapable of getting out of his own way. He's almost feeding the prosecutor ammunition.
Is he feeding the prosecutor but also feeding his base, though, in an efficient method?
You know, whatever he's gaining from keeping the base charged up, he's more than losing it. I mean, again, we would not be talking about Robert Mueller if it wasn't for Donald Trump. And, you know, the last few weeks, he's created this this monster that's now after him.
If Hillary Clinton would have been president, and if you assume that there would have been a movement by the right to try to unveil anything they could on her, where would we be at today? What do you think we'd be looking at? Would it be enough for the Clinton Foundation and things like that they'd be able to keep a scandal alive?
I'm sure, you know, if Congress was in the hands of Republicans, they'd continue to kind of hit on that, and not that they've really found a whole lot. But, you know, I think the big news is Donald Trump would be back to business. He'd be, you know, enjoying his penthouse in New York and his lovely, you know, mansions all over the country. You know, he wouldn't be into this. It's because, you know, President Trump won, and now he finds himself just under brutal investigation.
Yeah. Have you found this to be interesting and fascinating from where you sit?
You know, I got to tell you, I'm kind of a Pollyanna on this. Regardless of which party the president's from, I believe in our country. I'm a nationalist and a patriot. And what's happening is just not good for America. You know, to give you one example, China is, you know, moving in on our allies in Asia and Africa and even parts of the Middle East. And we're so distracted, you know, we're kind of lost sight of the ball. So it worries me a lot what's going on, strictly from the point of view of, you know, where does America stand in the world? And what are we going to be leaving for our kids and our grandkids?
Larry, appreciate your time very much.
Yeah, good to be with you again.
Larry Jacobs of Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. 1:50 is the time. It's Linda's construction time check. Time to install the last roof you will ever need with a GAF asphalt shingles. And I'll tell you why this is why some things don't work. But it was so good. I've got the tape somewhere. Years ago, like 15, 16 years ago, they decided to have Sid Hartman and I do the afternoon drive one day for Moose Miller. Moose was doing it at the time. He was off. And they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to book a show like we would book a show for Moose Miller. And you guys just have at. And let's just see what comes of it, right? Sid and I. And so Sid and I get together, and the producer books a regular show like we would today, right? It could be a Larry Jacobs. It could be a Teen Challenge. It could be a – and we're just supposed to have at. And I think the first guest was from the Pew Institute, and they were telling us how the internet was starting to really come of age, and that people were – not only were they beginning to use it, it was becoming exponential, but it was the wave of the future. Well, Sid didn't buy that from the person from the Pew Institute, who was just simply reciting statistics. This person was not defending or, you know, they had no horse. And Sid said, I know lots of people don't use the internet. Don't give me that crap. So this is how the show started. By the end of the show, the producer, whose name I will not reveal, was in tears because she had booked these guests that she probably needed again another time down the road. And Sid had pretty much insulted every one of them that came.
Well, that is, I will say, so I've been a producer now, 5 months? And obviously I had done it in the past, but 5 months here. And, oh gosh, even longer. Yeah, 5-6 months, whatever. You do have to take into account who your host is, which
and,
makes
And they
it...
purposely did this. I mean, they wanted her to book the show that way just to see how it would turn out.
Yeah,
if Sid was
out...
doing a non-sports show, would it be the same Sid? I mean, Sid walked out of there. He didn't think twice about it when he walked out the door.
Yeah, I bet that was an awkward follow-up email. Although, if the internet
don't
was
even
just
email
taking,
said,
yeah,
man, because we barely had the internet. I'll tell you what else has changed the game, though, in this business is when I think about when I first started, you had to call people at the office or at their home, and that was it. And there were a few people that had car phones, and then cell phones were coming in rapidly. But now, I mean, it's a quick text, it's a this or that, and at least you can get an answer from somebody, you hope. But back in the day, you'd sit and wait. You didn't know if they got your message. If they didn't, you know, you just had to take a shot at it, you know?
Well, I will say I am guilty when it's someone who's like a little uncomfortable to have to approach, like someone who's in the middle of a big trial.
You text.
Oh, I just email all the time. I only call if I absolutely have to. But that's about everything in life.
Yeah, but now we've got so comfortable with it that we expect that when we come back, Teen Challenge, the challenges of addiction, stay with us.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.